a very fine afternoon to everybody out there in podcast land. Welcome to episode number 41 of Tom Harris USA. And it feels really weird right now because I'm sitting here doing a show at 2:30 in the afternoon on a weekday. And that just feels very weird. It's very quiet and everybody else is at work. So this is the first show that I'm doing since I lost my job. I don't really count the last show because I recorded that on a Friday evening right after my last day of work. So I have not been idle over the last few days. And I guess that there's an aspect of this program now that's going to be sort of detailing the various job searching things that I'm doing. And I think that the most important thing when you lose a job is to land on your feet and just get right back out there and trying to find something. Now, that can be very frustrating. Now, one of the most important things, as I found, is to keep to a routine and not get lazy, because it's very easy to, for me especially, because I have this lazy nature to begin with, that I need to keep a routine, and that routine involves getting up early so that when I do find something, it's not going to be a big shock. Now, there are some days when I just don't feel like getting up, but I still get up. And then there are some days when I am just too lazy to get up and I'll just, you know, take an in day and, you know, just sleep till noon or whatever. But what I'm trying to do in this job hunt is to get up early, have breakfast, and then get online and check the various job sites and so forth. Now, last time I did a job search was a couple of years ago, and the economy was generally in a little bit better shape then. So I'm anticipating it's going to take longer for me this time to find something. So I'm redoubling my efforts and being a lot more aggressive about getting my resumes out there. Now, today is Tuesday. My last day of work was on Friday. One of the advantages I have with this job search, as opposed to the job search I did in 2007, was that in 2007, I was signed up with 9 staffing agencies who were all looking for work for me. Now, I didn't hear back from most of them. There were a couple that I did hear back from, and they would have, you know, questions or whatever. So I have those contacts already, and that's one of the things that I did earlier today was call the staffing agencies and say, hey, look, you know, you represented me a couple of years ago, the last time I was in the job market, and now I'm finding that I'm in the job market again. So I'm not going to have to go through all of that rigmarole again for the most part. I just spoke to another agency. They called me because of my resume on monster.com. So if you're doing a job hunt and you're in the States, now I don't know how this works over in the UK or whatever, because I know I have listeners now all over the world, but when you apply for unemployment here, you have to do it like right after you've been released from a job. Like the next business day, you're supposed to contact the state unemployment office and get your, you know, signed up for, you know, get your unemployment insurance. Now, to those of you who are not in the U.S., this isn't the same as the Dole. It's not the same as that at all. This is actually a program that when you're working, you pay into. It's unemployment insurance. And here in Illinois, we have the, it's called IDES, the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Now, I have never actually applied for unemployment before, but I did this time. And the reason why is because the general weakness of the job market right now means that I might be out of a job for a while. And last time, it took me 2 months to find a job. That's ordinarily, in a reasonably healthy economy, how long it would take. In this economy, I'm expecting it to take at least 3 months. So getting onto the unemployment benefits is something that I did right away this time. Now, what that does is that it pays you a percentage of what your previous salary was while you job hunt. And in this case, I think it's about 60% of what your salary was. What's very interesting about it this time for me is that 60% of my salary, my job that I just left, is actually more than what I was making at the previous job. So it's interesting. It does give me a little bit more of a cushion to be a little bit pickier and not just have to take the first job that comes along. So that's one very good thing. Now, not everybody has that advantage. And last time when I didn't have that advantage either. I didn't sign up for unemployment last time. It didn't seem like it was really even worth it. So going back to what I said before about keeping a routine, I have very strict guidelines for what I will allow myself to do or not do during the course of the day. Now, it's like I said, it's very easy for me to become lazy. So I keep myself to the job hunt stuff, and I dominate the morning with that. And so saying that I get up at 9 and I start job hunting every day at 10 and doing nothing but that until about lunchtime. And that would involve anything involved in the process, whether it's making appointments to go talk to somebody or whether it's sending out resumes or software, you know, dealing with software. That was one thing I did last time, and I'm very glad I did, is that between my last two jobs, I spent some time improving my Excel spreadsheet skills, because Excel is a really important piece of software, and it doesn't matter what kind of job you have. If you know how to use various software, it will help you. And that's one of the important things with resumes, and I'm finding this to be true all the time now, is that if you don't list a particular piece of software, they'll just assume you don't know how to use it. And that is kind of irksome, because I kind of figure, well, everyone knows how to use Word, everyone knows how to use Outlook, everyone knows how to use Excel. But that's not the case. So if you're doing a resume, maybe you're doing a resume for the first time, and you know how to use all these various softwares, it pays for you to list each one individually, even if it's something that you figure everybody knows how to use. Because not everybody knows how to web surf. And not everybody knows how to use, you know, email. So it is very important to list those things as skills. And if you have software on your computer, like I, for example, I have the Office Suite 2003 on my computer, to actually become better at using it during the point when you're unemployed. You know, make some dummy spreadsheets, build some stuff, you know, just to learn how to use various features that maybe you're not that familiar with. That can't do anything but help you when you're looking for work. The other thing, like I said, is the routine. And for example, I won't let myself watch any DVDs or play video games or anything before noon, because that is the time that I devote to job hunting. Now, if I happen to sleep later, then I will, you know, move that time slot accordingly, and, you know, between noon and 2 or whatever, I spend that whole time doing job stuff. So it is a matter of keeping disciplined and maybe improving your skills. It always can, it can't, like I said, it can't do anything but help you to keep to a routine. It does get frustrating when you don't hear anything back, and sometimes days and days go by when you don't hear anything at all. Now, it's also important to me, and I can't stress this enough, to not get too wound up. So it is also important to go out and have fun. Maybe not spending money type of fun. But for example, today, I went out and got a cup of coffee and walked around in the park for a while and just kind of spent some time outside away from the apartment, just kind of relaxing. Yesterday, Pete had to go run an errand, and I went with him down to the city. And we went to the zoo for a few hours. And that was a nice little break. The Lincoln Park Zoo doesn't cost any money. So that was something that we can do and just kind of go down and wander around and relax a little bit. So it's important to spend some time, you know, outside, get away from your apartment. Because, you know, if I were to sit around here all day, I would start feeling sorry for myself and start stressing out over not having work. So it is good to get out there. And I am going to increase the amount of walking I do and start a new little walking routine. And maybe that'll help me, you know, lose some weight. The other thing, and I can't stress this enough, if you're looking for a job, you have to keep yourself presentable. And I get lazy about shaving. I get lazy about the way I dress. I get lazy about showering or whatever if I don't do anything. So it is really important to, you know, maintain the routine stuff like showering and shaving and all that stuff while you're unemployed, because you never know when you might get called in for an interview. And so you don't want to have to, you know, refurbish yourself too much. So those are the things that I think about, you know. And if you don't have, you know, clothes that are suitable for interviewing, then maybe you should go out and get some. Because, like it or not, employers do discriminate based on appearance. And, you know, I can't show up for a job interview wearing, you know, a t-shirt and jeans. I've got to actually have, like, khakis and a button-down shirt. And for some employers, they like to see a tie. I mean, I happen to hate wearing a tie. I think, you know, I agree with my good friend Nathan, who says that, you know, the tie is the international symbol of mediocrity. And I do believe that. But it does pay to have something to wear to go out and to, you know, to keep it clean and all that. And speaking of which, now I have an interview set up for Friday, and this is something that has just come up during the recording of the show. And I, of course, edited that part out where I have to get up and answer the phone. But I am going to be going on Friday and having an interview with an agency. So why am I not excited about this? Well, it's because it doesn't mean much. Because what these agencies are is that it's a staffing agency. And their job is to find employees for, generally it's larger companies, the big corporations, Dow Chemical and IBM and that sort of thing. And they gather together as many resumes as possible. And so when they happen across a new resume at Monster.com with the skill sets that they're looking for, they will call them and set up an interview. Like I said before, this is one that I have dealt with in the past, and they didn't find anything for me last time. I'm not expecting them to find anything for me this time. However, it does pay to go and see them. And for that, when I'm talking about appearances just now, got to scrub up, trim down the beard, that is, you know, dress up nicely and be Johnny on the spot. Now, my interview with them is at 10 o'clock Friday morning, which means that I'll be at their office at 9:30 to fill out paperwork. And that's always a good rule of thumb, is to remember that you will need to fill out paperwork to show up early. And that way, when 10 o'clock comes around, there you are and you'll be ready for it. So I'm not that excited about it, like I said, because they don't generally find you anything. But it pays to go to these interviews and to do your very best at them, because you never know. Maybe they will find me something. It's hard to say. During my last job hunt, I got very excited about these interviews and went in there with a great deal of enthusiasm. And it's going to be tough to fake that kind of enthusiasm this time, because even though I was listed with 9 of these agencies, only one of them actually found me anything. And then only after I had resorted to doing temp work, because I was just getting really desperate. And in this case, like I said, I have a little bit of a pad to lean back on. So I don't need to worry too much right now. As time goes on, my circumstances will become tighter. Money will be a lot tighter, and I will need something almost immediately. Hopefully by then, knock on wood, not that I'm superstitious or anything, but why would an earth elemental be able to help me? But but just, you know, for luck, you know, hopefully that I will get something before that. Anyhow, that's just sort of my basic job hunting spiel, and I will keep all of you informed as to the progress that I'm making or lack thereof. And we can talk about this in future. As always, if you have any questions or comments, I would appreciate email. I love to get email from my listeners. The address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. Moving right along, I've had a couple of emails this week. I want to thank Irving for his email that he sent. I'm not going to read it out, but he was congratulating me on losing my job. Thank you for your kind wishes, Irving. And okay, so last time we were talking about the Beatles remixes, and I made a comment that there was a voice absent from the discussion, and asked what Richard thought. And I got an email from Richard telling me what he thought. So this is a long email, and so I'm going to go ahead and get to it right away. This is coming from Richard, also known as Comrade Spaghetti, who is a good friend of mine. You might remember him from a previous episode. I will start out by saying that Richard isn't just an ordinary schmuck off the street. He is a professional musician, very talented singer-songwriter, so he knows his stuff, as you'll see when he's talking about music. So Richard had this to say, in regards to the Beatles remasters, I should probably point out first that I am a heroic vinyl supporter. I seldom listen to CDs other than my old-time radio shows and my monthly Big Finish Doctor Who's. And yes, that does officially make me a dork. you know, if you're a dork, Richard, I'm sure that you know, we all are. I mean, I love Doctor Who, too. But I was curious, Orange, and investigated a couple of the newly remastered Beatle releases, specifically Revolver and Rubber Soul, which are perhaps, today at least, my favorites. I agree with you there, Richard. I think those two are my favorites as well. I can say wholeheartedly that they are a vast improvement on the discs that have been on the market for these last 15 or so years. Having said that, there are some major problems with the super high scrubby def remastering. Some tracks sound remarkably good. I'm Only Sleeping, for instance, sounds pretty damn nice. Good space in the mix, has some punch, stereo imaging holds up pretty well. On the other hand, Here, There, and Everywhere is a prime example of the folly of this kind of refurbishment. The track has been so meticulously cleaned, pressed, and starched that Paul's vocal tracks no longer phase together as they should, and what was once a beautiful vocal performance becomes strangely annoying. We double-track vocals to create a performance, and in this case, the performance is undermined by the remastering. In other spots on these reissues, Taxman, I'm looking at you, the remastering has produced some annoying drum anomalies. I'm one of those who think Ringo was a brilliant drummer, but on a few of these tracks, his performance seems to drop in and out of the mix. This may be the result of original editing now punched up into the foreground, or more likely, the inability of the digital medium to really handle those round analog drum sounds. Remembering that Ringo's kit, as was common at the time, had calfskin heads, which is why drums today lack that subtle and smooth thump of vintage kits. Not that I advocate killing anything for music aside from the artists themselves. So after listening to the albums, I pulled out my copy of Revolver, a Parlophone record I bought in North Carolina with my vacation money when I was 9 or so, in order to spot reference some of the oddities that I had noticed on the disc. Just a quick reference listen, you understand. The vinyl sounded so rich and fab that I ended up playing the whole damn thing through again, front to back, which just goes to show that no remaster is going to take place of the actual vinyl record. For those who are slavishly devoted to the CD medium, or worse, the digital download, these are probably as good as it's going to get. I would like to point out, though, that chasing the dragon of hi-fi sonic brilliance in the world of digital remastering is very much akin to heroin addiction. The chase goes on, but you never do catch that dragon, and eventually it always ends badly. On a side note, if one more person tells me they have a room full of records and nothing to play them on, I shall be forced to stalk the nation like an avenging angel or a skinny guy with a scythe. Incidentally, Richard, the reason why I don't have a turntable is that I did have one when I first moved here to Chicago, but shortly after I moved here, my turntable quit working, or rather the tuner did. And because it was a cheap stereo to begin with, I think it was a Realistic from Radio Shack. So, I mean, it was many, many years old. I just never bothered to replace it because most of the stuff that I was listening to heavily on LP, I have since replaced on CD. I wouldn't spend hundreds of dollars to buy a CD of something I already own on record, as one of our mutual friends did. But there, I do have a few things on vinyl that I cannot get on CD that I would like to listen to. So I do think that eventually I will get a turntable, and then I'll be able to listen to a number of things that I haven't been able to listen to in a long time. But anyway, on to the question of stereo in the modern world. I am a big fan of that classic severe stereo imaging. There aren't a lot of us out there. I enjoy the ping-pong effect, much like Doug, I might add, and the slow panning of channels, all that NAF stuff. You can find it in most of my own recordings. People make faces at me. I do not care. I think that there are two main reasons why we see so little of this in recordings post-1973 or so. First, the technology itself has determined much of the modern mix. When you're dealing with 64 tracks and above, and now with digital virtual tracks, it is nearly endless, the soundscape of a recording is necessarily cramped. There is no real separation of stereo channels and no real need to point up the stereo mix. Stereo is old hat and is just a given now. I find very many modern stereo recordings sound more like mono mixes than true stereo mixes. This is not always true. Obviously, there are still people making some fairly interesting records with some fairly interesting uses of stereo. Secondly, when creating a mix, the rule of thumb now seems to be to give an approximation of a live performance, which is to say, to create a soundscape that replicates the physical arrangement of the performers, drums in the center, with the instruments on the sides and the vocals out front. Imagine sitting in front of a band playing in a club, and you'll get the idea. The sounds comes to you without any real separation aside from the subtle vagaries of where each performer may be standing relative to center stage. Early stereo mixes were used to highlight the stereo process itself and became one of the tools with which to create an interesting and hopefully dynamic piece of art. Like any new artistic technique, it has gone from integral to passé. Good God, this is a long note. Remember you asked. Yes, I did ask. But that's exactly the sort of input I was looking for, Richard, and it's very, very nice of you to spend that kind of time writing to me. Richard actually sent me an additional mail on the same subject, and he mentions, I haven't heard the new remasters of the mono mixes yet, but the mono mixes of the Beatles LPs are substantially different than their stereo counterparts, at least as regards Rubber Soul through the White Album. Pre-Rubber Soul mixes pretty much stay true to the rock and roll motif of the day, but as the lads got more adventuresome, the mixes followed suit. It's been said of these mono mixes of these later albums that were versions that John and Paul worked on and assumed to be the finished product, while the stereo mixes were left to George Martin to deal with. That's possible. George Martin was a genius, though I doubt it myself. It does presuppose that the boys weren't really paying attention to the new techniques, and I find that unlikely. Still, the mono versions do not just approximate the stereo versions. They were approached differently and subsequently turned out differently. They can be very interesting and rewarding. As a rule, they are hotter, at least on vinyl, and more solid productions, i.e. less brittle and or sparse, or baroque if you like, in places. As I've said, I'm a stereo fanatic, so I've never spent a lot of time tracking down copies of these mono versions. I've heard them, enjoyed them, and gone back happily to my record collection without feeling slighted or deprived. In a perfect world, I would have both, but then in a perfect world, I would have recorded them in the first place. Comrade Spaghetti. Thank you very much, Richard. I very much appreciate your input. I think it's very interesting what you're saying here. And I will agree with you 99.9% of this. I think that, I'm one of those people who doesn't think that Ringo was a brilliant drummer. And I think he was summed up by John Lennon in a TV interview where somebody asked John if Ringo was the best drummer in the world. And John's comment was, well, he's not even the best drummer in the Beatles. But that being said, it's the Beatles. I mean, God, it's the fucking Beatles, okay? So I can't really complain too much. I'm very much looking forward to hearing these reissues, and I'm not particularly interested in the mono releases. Like I said before, I think that it showcases a limitation in the style that they're recording in. Agree with you, Revolver and Rubber Soul are probably my two favorite Beatles albums as well. I like that whole middle period, that post-Mop Top but pre-Sergeant Pepper era. And not to say I don't love the later stuff as well. Richard put a little footnote on here, and he's saying that when he said that the sound of these new CDs are as good as it's likely to get, he should make it clear that he finds the disc pretty poor, if not offensive. But he's tried to be objective and some way have been overly kind. I actually, when you're talking about the stereo effects, I'm going to totally agree with you on this. And this is something I'm finding in a lot of the stuff. I've been listening to a lot of retro stuff lately. Stuff that I haven't listened to in years. And I'll give examples. The Moody Blues. Genesis. And when I say Genesis, I do not mean the crap that Phil Collins did. But the original Genesis pre-1975 when Peter Gabriel was their lead singer and songwriter. Some of that stuff is pretty naff, but most of it I find to be very interesting, and it's not really something that I was into at that time. It's something that I've discovered over the years. I've been listening to a lot of progressive rock and stuff that my brother listened to back when we were teenagers that I kind of dismissed. I was more into, Kansas and that sort of thing back during that time. I talked with Joe about that when I talked to him on his show. But Emerson, Lake and Palmer, things like that, Pink Floyd, were bands that I was into then. And I listened to all that stuff rather than listen to disco because I absolutely despise that. And they do use some very, very interesting stereo effects. And I'm finding that as I'm sitting here listening to Genesis or that sort of thing through the headphones. And you definitely hear the panning. I know I mentioned in the last show, the Moody Blues, In Search of the Lost Chord. And they use these fancy stereo effects quite liberally on that album in particular. But let's not forget that, the Moody Blues' first album, Days of Future Past, was a stereo showcase. And it even says on the cover, that this is a stereo showcase. So interesting, interesting stuff. Thanks, Richard, for sending that along. Your input is very much appreciated to the program. And I might add that Richard is possibly going to be doing a little bit of music for the show. So we have that to be looking forward to. So thank you once again, Richard, for your contribution. And I do look forward to hearing from you in the very near future. As I do anybody who's listening to the show who may wish to contribute. If you have something to add to the conversation, I would love to hear from you. Or if you have suggestions as to what topics you would like me to talk about on the show, suggestions are always useful, folks. It's not easy to come up with a new topic to talk about every time. Anyhow, feel free to contact the show. I love to hear from my listeners, and especially if you're one of those who I haven't heard from, because I know that there are lots of listeners out there who don't write in. And I'd be interested in hearing from the lurkers out there, as it were, because after all, I don't know who you are. So let me know who you are. The email address for the show, as always, is tom@tomharrisusa.com. And you can also join the Tom Harris USA podcast community on Facebook. Just look for it in the search. And I'll talk to you again very near future. This is Tom at Tom Harris USA signing off. We'll see you next time.